I'm here with Lyra, 12th of August 2023, around 11:30 p.m. So I think the state election just sort of almost concluded, right, Lyra?
Yes, it is.
And so I want to do a quick live stream with David Tian, who is in Kedah. But I think as of now, those of you who are watching this show, you will know that the six states election is sort of status quo. So all the incumbent government retain it. But what's interesting, Lyra, is that we are seeing super majority formation of state government in Terengganu, in Kelantan, Kedah. Even two-thirds in Negeri Sembilan and Penang.
Yeah,
and Selangor
right. Is
just a simple majority. So do you find that interesting?
Yeah, indeed. I mean, I just see that it's almost like, does that mean that Green Wave does not exist?
We'll get into that in a while. But I think we have David Tian is ready to join us and want to get his instant reaction. Hi, David.
Hi, everyone.
Hello. David,
and finally, it's very quiet there now, right?
Yes, you know, yesterday night, midnight, there's a convoy of Pakata National, you know, traffic jam in 1 a.m. It's crazy in Alostar town area. So, you know, there are strands there. Now, they are everywhere kind of things.
Yeah,
and our state election result, we left the Prapaduan left 3-6 all the Malay majority states. Prapaduan lost.
I mean, just a few days ago, we are just saying we are not sure how the wind will blow. But this time, it looks like the voice, at least in Kedah, is loud and clear. But of course, you mentioned about the convoy at 1 a.m. But what's the instant reactions, you know, from yourself, but also, you know, some of the political operators you are with? I know the analysis will go on for a while, but just right now on the ground, what are people feeling about the outcome?
For my own reaction of this election, it's acceptable for Kedah, because we kind of expecting that this, but we didn't feel like, we didn't expect it's like 3-33. So it's kind of, I don't think it is Green Wave.
Yeah,
I think it is a Sanusi wave.
Mm-hmm.
According to all the Saluran, actually all the BN votes go to PN.
Yeah,
and Pakatan Harapan remain his basic lah. Even DAP lost only one seat in Dega. So Dega now is a Malay majority seat, is have 63% of Malays. So lost by 3,800 votes. Yeah, we look at the vote share. Actually, PH still have the same vote as PRU-15.
Mm-hmm.
So for the other six, like Alor Bengkudu, Sukamananti, is the most Kuala Kedah, Pokok Senah, and Alostar is the greatest Alostar area. Actually, all the Malay majority seat, PKR, Amana, UMNO lost all.
Yep, yep.
Even UMNO President Khalid, Mahfuz, PH President, all lost by a big majority.
Yeah, Mahfuz won the parliament seat, right? And by almost
he lost at Pokok Senah.
Oh, he lost that round, but this time the majority increased even further, right?
I'm not sure, but I think PN just enlarged their ground in Kedah.
Now you mentioned that you don't think it's Green Wave, and I think Lyra and myself we also feel that. But is it more like maybe, you know, the Malay are looking for a defender? And UMNO and PKR and Amana are just not able to do that? Or at least they don't give the impression of like Sanusi, the populace, you know, the leader on the ground. Do you get that feel, you know, in your two or three weeks in Kedah?
I do agree with this kind of sentiment, because PH and BN didn't have a strong leader in Kedah. Even in Kelantan and Terengganu, they didn't have a strong leaders. But in Selangor, we see a bunch of leaders, capable leaders who can counter PN and Penang as well. So I do think this is one of the indicators and factors of Prapaduan kalah teluk in Kedah. But I think if we have a influencer kind of MB or candidate, are we opposed PNS so strong? I don't think so. I think it's about sentiment. It's about daily life. Because actually Kedah, Terengganu, and Kelantan is one of the three of the poorest state in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So what if Anwar in this 4 years can improve Kedah, Kelantan, and Terengganu economic? It might help, I think.
Yeah. Now before Lyra, if you have anything to ask, you can ask. But I just have one more comment, and maybe David, you can kind of respond, because we look at Terengganu, right, and the incoming Menteri Besar Shamsuri Mokhtar, past leader, but he is not perceived as a religious leader, and I think that is one of the way why we can really, you know, I mean, if we define Green Wave as the religious wave, you know, I think I tend to agree that it's not there, but maybe it's the economic reality kind of, you know, it's not really like for Islam, it's not even Malay supremacy, but they wanted some sort of economic champion perhaps. So, I mean, Terengganu is shaping out to be no opposition, perhaps, you know, I think the result is still being tallied. Tomorrow we will know. But what do you feel about that?
I think the religious sentiment still play a very strong role in Kelantan and Terengganu, because we know past have the Padika, as the whole education system about religion, about you have to, it's like undi pas masuk surga kind of sentiment. Still work, because some of the propaganda of past Bersatu, they play a thing. It's like, if you think you vote for Pakatan Harapan and UMNO, it is a dosa. It's a thing of dosa, and it will cost you. Okay, Terengganu and Kelantan. Let's say we put in a scenario: if Kelantan and Terengganu, they have a major increase in economic, what will you pass to, or pass intentionally make the people poor? I don't think so. Because if you look at the Timbalan Menteri Besar of Kelantan, he said the water problem is not easy to solve. Mm-hmm. Even of changing government, it's not easy to solve. I think it is very important for Kerajaan Pusat, which is federal government, to put some resources there. But it all require all the cooperation of state government and federation.
Yeah, Lyra, you have any question for David before we kind of wrap up?
Yeah, so David, just now you mentioned about the Shamsuri wave. So maybe you want to elaborate to our audience here. What do you mean by Shamsuri wave? Like, is he... Because just now we make a comparison with Shamsuri as well. So because both of these people represent someone who can really champion the cause for especially the Malay community. And even like Shamsuri, he's described as technocrat rather than really a religious leader. So although you mentioned earlier on there is some input from the past leaders, especially to the educating the younger ones, that if you vote, a vote for past is a vote to go to heaven, that sort of thing. So, but what do you make of Shamsuri wave?
For Shamsuri wave, before Shamsuri being sued in the court, we didn't feel the effect is so strong. But after he being caught by police, and I feel like all the Malay communities, especially the youngsters in TikTok, they are like, oh, Shamsuri is our hero. Shamsuri have copied the sign of Anwar Reformasi, raise up his right hand. So make Shamsuri become an influencer as well as a pop star lah. So in Kedah, people like to have an icon to follow. Mm-hmm. And we see we have two prime ministers from Kedah, which is Mahathir, and Tunku Abdul Rahman, I think, is also from Kedah. So it's about the identity politics. Like Kedah, we have strong leaders, but this kind of narrative cannot explain why PAS and Bersatu win big in Terengganu, right? Mm-hmm. I think, actually, I'm not familiar with Terengganu situation, but Terengganu kind of Samsuri is not the fanatic religion, a religious leader in Terengganu. And in contrast, he is a technocracy, he's a PhD. He is kind of not that vocal in religious sentiment within the party. So I think it's also about, he's kind of facing some of the inner fight in Terengganu as well. Because before PAS announced their MB candidate, before Hari Pengundian, he is not elected as a MB candidate. So I think if I want to explain this kind of situation, it's about the grassroots there. And Terengganu this time, they didn't swing back to BN, maybe because BN is weak, not because PAS is strong.
Okay.
So if UMNO, if Babaduan, if Amana can do well, can Turun Badan more, because if for my information or politics, most of the PKR Amana kind of leader, they not usually Turun Badan, but PAS is everywhere.
Yep.
Like DAP is everywhere. Turun Badan, if you want to find service, you can go to any Pusakimat DAP and they will provide service to you, same as PAS, but not as well as PKR and Amana. And I'm not kind of very strong, used to be very strong there, but because of lack of resources, they kind of dragging behind. So they have to find a way to do the work, the hard work.
Yeah, David, I had wanted to ask you, you know, what they should be doing, but I think you just answered it, you know, that especially for state level kind of election, because it's almost like a local election and people, you know, the candidate need, the voters need to feel that the candidates are serving the constituent, I think more so than the parliament seat. But anyway, before we end, I just want to ask you, what's your take on Selangor, you know, for the unity? I think the kind of is quite confirmed already that unity is going to retain the government. Should they be satisfied with the result?
I don't think so. They have to satisfy with the result because they lost the two-third majority. And we know two of the seats, like Taman Medan, lose by 30 votes. And Gombak Setia lose by 50 votes, which are very kesiang lah. So if we count that two, maybe they passed the two-third majority already.
But it wasn't as bad as what people kind of predicted, right? People kind of felt maybe there's an opportunity for PN to flip? Or you never felt that? You never really felt that?
Actually, within the camp, all the people are worried about whether Selangor will flip. But I think it's the worry caused by the leadership of both sides. because PN want to attack and PHBN, they want to use this worry to cause Chinese voter to come back to vote. I can say most of the seats like DAP, like Sekin Chang, like Kuala Buru Baru, might probably saved by the high voter turnout of Chinese voters.
When you spook the voters and they show up, I think Sekin Chang is a great example of that.
Yeah, Sekin Chang have their highest majority.
Ever.
Sui Lim has the highest majority within the fight. It's like crazy. Okay, you say this is a dangerous seat and then you secure the highest majority, which is very good also.
So is it a viable strategy? I mean, I kind of get annoyed with that the last 2 or 3 weeks. You know, you kind of play the, I don't know, scary or dooms
victim,
game.
Victimhood.
Yeah. In a way. But it works. I think it shows that a lot of voters are motivated by fear.
Yeah, I think at the moment, you have like a week to motivate, mobilize our voters. If you didn't have the positive result, or like let's say we have a very good economic growth, what can you do?
Yeah. That's the situation.
You can only play this kind of tactic, and according to our experience, it works every time.
Yeah. So David, when are you coming back to Klang Valley?
Klang Valley, I think a few days later, but I think I will make a long rest.
Okay, so David, when you come back and you know we have more data and more analysis, I think we want to get you on the show and maybe we can do some just granular analysis to see, you know, is it really the end of UMNO? You know, it looks kind of bleak. But of course, we don't have the Saloran information. Not really. You know, from the big picture, it looks very bleak for them. But anyway, we look forward for you to coming back. Thanks for joining us today and the last episode. Really appreciate that.
Sure. Thank you, Simon and Lyra.
All right.
Hope to see you in Klang Valley.
All right. Yep. See you soon. See you. Okay. Bye, David.
Bye-bye.
So that's pretty interesting from David, right? And I, you know, remember the last show he was on, so they were not very sure. I guess maybe still a little bit hopeful, but kind of, yeah, I mean, I just look at 1124, the live blog. You know what's the title? Bye-bye, UMNO. I mean, talking about Kelantan, just one seat. Terengganu lost all the 10 seats. Kedah lost all the seats. So, I mean, we kind of jot a few things we want to talk about, right? Green Wave sort of discussed with David. He doesn't feel... I mean, if we define Green Wave as Islamic Wave, he doesn't think it's there. I think you also don't think so. We also don't think so.
But perhaps it's more similar to what sisters in Islam they were describing. Mm. Perhaps it's the Malay supremacy that has been totally hijacked by PAS. Because UMNO was perceived to be someone who is supposed to be championing all this, the Islamization policy. But in fact, this whole thing really, like what we were saying just now, that the Malay community really needed someone who just could champion that cause for them, like their voices are heard on the ground.
Yeah, I know we kept talking about, you know, reforming, you know, becoming a progressive nation. But Lyra, do you think the Malay Defender is still necessary, at least in this transition period?
Yeah, I should think so. I mean, just based on what David was mentioning just now, I mean, even with the Sanusi, I think it's like really people are seeing someone. I think in our last episode, you were mentioning that Sanusi was actually being compared to Trump. His popularity just went up when he was being indicted. So
yeah, David kind of mentioned that, right? That when he was arrested and charged, I think the young people, especially the support, went up for him because now suddenly he is considered like a hero who is sacrificing his life and freedom for the people. Very much like Trump, like how his rating just went off the chart after the indictment.
Yeah, would you reckon that it is something like what maybe the political scientists would describe as post-liberalism. Something like they need someone... It's not so much of the ground people, I mean, the grassroots people that the voices have been heard, but someone of the enlightened elite that could champion the cause and really help them to provide some sort of like the betterment of for common good, those sort of things.
Yeah, Lara, it's interesting you mentioned post-liberalism because that's the whole thing, you know, since World War II, you know, the whole theory about we should give more liberty. I mean, liberal and liberty are not the same, but I'm talking about the liberal political movement, more rights, more free market and things like that. But it's never really like that. And I think it's a good time for us to kind of just maybe explain a little bit about the populace because populace is really, yes, you are trying to meet the need of the people, but at the same time, when you help them, you are trying to cause them to be independent, to be a free agent. But at the same time, there needs to be some governmental policy. It cannot be fully free market. It cannot be fully liberal. I mean, we have seen from a cultural point of view, I mean, just the last few incidences, we have performers who came here, you know, who kind of do very overt LGBT kind of expressions. And we have a large majority. And it's not just the Malay Muslim. A lot of Chinese, Indian, and the native people are not happy with this kind of performance also. So this is what we call, you know, the populist movement. You know, we see like Donald Trump. He advocated, yes, freedom, but some acceptable level of governmental intervention. And I just sort of feel Sanusi represented because... He kind of gave the impression, and maybe that's what he was doing, you know, he was helping the people, but at the same time, he has that strong man edge. People want to see strong leader rather than weak leader. But we don't want to go back to Mahathir's era.
No, we don't.
So it's like, I mean, look at Lee Hsien Loong, right? I mean, people kind of prefer him over the father. I mean, it's like he's not so iron fist, right? But he is still in control.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. I mean, I just feel like, you know, if we have a Lee Hsien Loong, I'm not really a big fan of Singapore, but I would say his leadership style, I find it quite appealing because he is firm without dominating. And I don't know, you know, Sanusi gave me that kind of impression that he's like, I'm the defender and I'm going to give the power back to you, but I'm still in charge. just a feeling, you know. And but yeah, I mean, it's like I don't see that Islamic green wave, not this time around.
Yeah, I would agree as well.
So what do you make? I mean, we kind of mentioned in the introduction, what do you make of super majority government now? Kelantan, Terengganu, Kedah, 2/3 in Penang and Negeri Sembilan. And Selangor, quite close to 2/3, if not for those two seats that David Tian just mentioned. So it's not nearly as competitive. I mean, of course, you have the northern Selangor, you have the rural-urban boundary, but when you look at the city area, it's really no contest, right? So what do you make of that? Is that a sign of decentralization?
Well, I suppose in a way it is. Rather than saying that it's a referendum towards Anwar Ibrahim's
which is another point I want to talk about later.
I think it's more like it's a rejection of UMNO.
Mm-hmm.
I think UMNO really has to find a way how they are going to do a total reformation of the whole party itself. So I think this results really show, I mean, my first impression would be the people are rejecting, especially those who are voting for Perikatan Nasional, they are really rejecting Barisan Nasional because there is no that strong person who can really, really champion the cause. And plus, I think there's a lot of perception that there are a lot of corruption that is going on in UMNO itself. So yep. I thought that's like my first perception towards this whole super majority. But I felt like there is also a way moving forward that could possibly pave way for local elections to happen. Mm. Because, yep. I mean, if you see super majority, I guess people are showing that the voices that I want my community to be represented well in this whole election. So I felt like that could be something that people are really looking for.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that one of the points that we kept on discussing here is really since the last GE, that the green wave, I mean, when we used to, now I think about it, I don't really like the term green wave because it's like it represents past and Islamic, but we're talking about the trending towards PN, right? And one of the questions we constantly ask in this show is, are people really supporting PN or is UMNO losing support? And I think this time around, it seems to confirm that it's UMNO losing support. Even Kedah not doing so well overall. And David Tian said, based on the Salorant, PH sort of maintain their voting share compared to the last GE, but UMNO vote kind of went over the other side. So I think if that's the case, then this green wave can be dealt in a different way because it's not really, it's not like our country is in danger of disintegrating from a multicultural nation, but rather it is the people they perceive they need a different defender. They need someone who is going to work for them, and you know I'm not used to do that now. No resources. If Amana and PKR do not want to do that, then maybe they need to be a different party to service the Malay.
Mm.
I mean, it's as simple as that. Now we have to talk about the third force, right?
Of course. But before that, I mean, we have just seen the results here for Terengganu.
Mm, it is clean sweep.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, you don't have any opposition at all.
Now it's interesting. Just we were just watching Astro Awani, right? And political scientist Wong Ching-Huat, he was there, and he said, in his view, UMNO is becoming like the old MCA. Basically, you know, the old MCA, whenever, you know, MCA won a few seats, the last few GE, but it's always in mixed area. If they go to Chinese majority area, they have no chance of beating DAP. So it's almost like the same now with UMNO. They can only do well in the Negeri Sembilan and Penang on the right of Pakatan Harapan, DAP especially. And then all the places where they're supposed to show their strength, Kedah and Terengganu and Kelantan, they totally went bust. And he made a very interesting comment, and KJ was there and said, I didn't say that, you know. But he seemingly agreed with that, KJ, which is UMNO has to come out with its own message. They cannot continue to ride on the Pakatan Harapan. And interestingly, we kind of talk about it, right? Now you have PN and Unity. On a straight fight, seems like the Unity in at least Malay majority seats, they can't compete. But if you have a three-way fight, actually it's more competitive. interestingly, because some people will go back to a reform UMNO maybe. So I don't know, you know, maybe UMNO has to carve out for themselves and becoming a more junior partner, but still able to carve something for themselves. As it is, you know, they join PN, their vote share will be reduced among the Malay. They ride on Pakatan Harapan doesn't seem to be the way also.
Yeah, I mean, you just see like a Muda Party as well, that they are, I mean, in the last general election, they are, of course, definitely because they are partners with Pakatan Harapan, so they are riding on the wave. But this time around, they present themselves as third force. So you begin to see also a different kind of narrative here, because you have UMNO, who is really like riding on Pakatan Harapan's wave, but you also have Muda that is going against Pakatan Harapan, and especially towards Barisan Nasional, and especially towards UMNO president.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like it's almost like a foreshadowing of what KJ and a few party members of UMNO, they did in the general election. So I felt like in this way, maybe they didn't play their strategy well.
Yeah.
I mean, although they could have that sort of chance to be really like a third force if they have certain sort of champion, because there are certain messages like, let's bring back the local election. Those sort of messages were kind of like being drowned in the swamp of this whole thing. Especially you have like Pakatan Harapan supporters, like hardcore supporters, and even Pakatan Harapan leaders that are sort of like saying that, hey, you guys are like the spoiler. So in that sort of scenario, that sort of mood, you have to be strategic. You have to be wise in the sense that, hey, I'm pushing, although I'm the minority here, I'm pushing for a certain cause, like let's bring back the local election, let's bring back check and balance. So you are saying that you're coming here as that third force check and balance, and yet you're throwing shades at another party, I mean, who is supposed to be your partner in the federal government level. So a lot of people are probably confused in that sense.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And another example that sort of come to my mind really was the last general election, especially in Sarawak. You see, you have PSB who kind of combine with the independent-minded people, and they try to say we are the check and balance, we are the alternative. But again, in the campaigns, very evidently, they didn't go against Sabri's governments for what they did, but instead they went against Pakatan. And because I think the reason is very simple, they are going after the same voter group. So Muda is doing that because they are trying to carve out from the same voter pool as Pakatan Harapan, and I think they are punished quite severely this time. But Lyra, do you think the appetite for third force is diminishing, especially in light of the rise of Pakatan?
It seems like it though. I mean, it seems like people are still driven, really. I think one factor is really fear. I mean, of course, you have a lot of fear-mongering tactics that were being thrown out.
It definitely works this time, right?
Yeah. So that itself, I think people are still recovering from the aftermath of COVID era. I mean, you have a lot of things that are, people don't really see a way out yet, especially from economic point of view. So I felt like because they were not really championing, especially Muda, who present themselves as third force. So the third force is not really championing themselves as really being a third force that, hey, I could bring a solution, a viable solution to the table. So maybe because of that, I think people are like, hey, maybe we don't want third force at all for now, I think. So maybe, maybe because the duration from the last GE to now state election is just so near, just several months apart, maybe there's no appetite at all.
Yep. And you look at third force and even independent candidate, I mean, compared to the general election, way, way fewer candidate, you know, and it's just, yeah, I think maybe the last general election, too many independent lost their deposit and things like that. But I mean, look at the result. It looks like Muda lost most of the deposit also, right?
Yep.
And Lara, we just kind of, I know we can't really do too much analysis because we don't know how the shifting of the vote comes from. We had to look at the Saloran and things like that. I think that analysis will have to wait for another day. But just based on the result now, and we're going to close with this already, two questions for you. Okay, one is, do you see the state elections as a referendum for Anwar, yes or no? But if yes, then does the result kind of validate him or invalidate him, you know, for the lack of a better word? Then second one is just, moving forward for Malaysia, what do you think are some of the things that both sides of the political divide should be focusing on?
Well, I think for the first one, I personally don't think it is a referendum towards Anwar Ibrahim's government. I mean, but I felt like they are a bit more high level. So it's like when you go into a meeting, you always have those people who are talking about high level stuff. So they are really kind of like up there, not really going down to the ground. So I felt like it's more like a message towards Anwar Ibrahim rather than a referendum towards like, hey, I'm not happy with this unity government. I felt like people have sort of accepted that, well, we could find a way to work because that's just how it is. That's how people voted. So we kind of have to work. Like for this 5 years, we're going to have to like really bear with this whole unity government because we don't, obviously we don't want another like backdoor government again. So I felt like people don't have that appetite for backdoor government. So I felt it's not a referendum.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not referendum. But would you say that Anwar Ibrahim can come out and say, look, this is status quo from the last GE? You know, like I'm not conceding anything because I retained the three states and Greece and Milan did better. And yes, Selangor, some setback and things like that. But could he come out and say that, yeah, it's still basically the same mandate, if you like?
I think he might definitely say that. I mean, he's a person who can talk very well. I mean that's the point that is drawing people to him as well. So in that context, I felt like he probably will come out and say that, hey, look, that's not going to...
All is fine.
Yeah, all is well, all is fine. But if they were to look at the granular data, I think that's where people will begin to see, hey, maybe this area we didn't do well. So there should be humility on his part.
Yeah.
I mean, not just... I mean, of course, you need to present all is well, that sort of picture, but he also need to like come back to the drawing table and really just begin to see, hey, how come we're not... How come we're losing ground in certain areas and like Kedah, those sort of areas?
Yep.
Are we playing our tactics wrong? Those sort of things. So that goes to the second question. Moving forward for Malaysia, I felt like there is an appetite. It looks like there is an appetite with all this supermajority in different states here for populist, the rise of populist move. I mean, for better or for worse, those sort of things. So I felt like it's in the sense that in terms of populist move, there has to be someone who can champion it. So if Prime Minister, because I do think Prime Minister has that sort of potential, because he himself came through that sort of hardship, and there could be a potential for his government to really just chart the way out for populist move, like be the next Donald Trump. I mean, even for Malaysia as well, that yes, it might not be popular in terms of some of the things that you're going to be doing, and even like racial quota, I think there are a lot of talks about racial quota and meritocracy, those sort of things. I think he should be bold enough to really just come to the table. I think because Sanusi gets such an overwhelming support because he's like Brani Karana Bernard, those sort of attitude. I felt like Anwar Ibrahim could really use some of those boldness and courage to really chart the way out for the people in Malaysia to really just define what populist move is for Malaysia.
You mentioned Donald Trump, and you know we cover him quite substantially in this show. And I was just thinking about the affirmative action as one example. You see, of course, from the reform mindset point of view, it would be like, oh, that's racist. It shouldn't be done. But think about how the populace would deal with this movement. They would say, yes, fundamentally, it's not fair. It's against meritocracy. But we have people who are suffering. Not just the Malay. In fact, the Indian community are very much neglected in the tertiary arena. The Orang Asli, even more so. So then it's like, how do we help these people but without reverting to racist kind of solution? So I think that's what populist movement do. And sometimes you look at it and people look at Donald Trump from a very macro view. It'll be like, oh, he is... he's someone who is very much into protectionism. You know, he wants a trade war with China and things like that. But he's thinking about jobs. He's thinking about livelihood. He's thinking about how do I enrich the middle class. And that's, I think, is what separates the populist movement from the modern-day liberal move, which definitely, I think, has failed society. And COVID kind of exposed them left, right, and center throughout the world. That's why it's not a coincidence that the center conservative all around the world are winning elections right now. Because people know this kind of unrestrained free trade, so-called, is not going to work. And I think we are feeling the effect here now in Malaysia. And people are like, I don't want your Pakatan Harapan, Buku Jingga, you know, all the things that you mentioned in 2018. I think that is out already. We need a new narrative. Like KJ like to use the word, right? New narratives. But I do agree with him that we need to frame what are the needs of the people. And this state election just kind of opened the way. Now, think about one of the things we constantly say, right? Local election. I guarantee you, if we're local election, we're going to have even super messy election, and people are going to pull the hairs out of other people all the time.
I mean, probably even lower voter turnout.
Yeah.
I think people are already super concerned.
It's like once every 5 years, I'm already tired. Now I have to do 3 times per 5 year cycle. But hey, you want participation, there is a price to pay. But another point I want to make regarding what possibly Anwar could do, again, look at Terengganu, look at Kelantan. They have a lot of petroleum royalty issue also. And we know the federal government totally had been dominating them for a long time. And why not give them a deal like Sabah and Sarawak? And suddenly people will be like, hey, you care for us and maybe we can give you an opportunity. Why not? I think he was... I mean, just like Ashraf Wani, people were like, even GPS so dominant, but what people failed to mention was that the last general election, Pakatan Harapan made a lot of gains in Sarawak. And even in a lot of seats they lost, not to mention the seats they won. And after that, their pro-Sarawak autonomy policy really helped. So if you give Kelantan Terengganu a better deal in oil royalty, in petroleum royalty, do you think people might... you help to solve their water issue, Kelantan, very bad, just now David Tian was saying. Maybe people will look at you and you are trying to solve our problem without looking at political advantage all the time.
Yeah, I think people are really looking for someone who is like apolitical. Mm-hmm. Really, really just someone who can... Like what you say, I mean, I really do like that sort of suggestion, and I hope that our Prime Minister would definitely consider this sort of suggestion in terms of really just look beyond the political agenda and really begin to help people. Because if you say that Malaysia is a country that is really of multiracial sort of composition, and of course every state people, they want their needs to be met, at least the basic needs, like these sort of things are like water and even the betterment, the infrastructure of the respective states. I think this is something that the federal government could mm-hmm. strike a deal with the state government.
Yeah. Indeed, absolutely. So I think that's all the time we have for now. Now it's almost 12:08 a.m. So I think election is settled and we have, you know, the few weeks to come just to unpack the result. And I think we're going to get David Tian back to look at the granular results. But basically, I think both camps will be somewhat satisfied. When I say both camps, I'm talking about PH and PN. Definitely not UMNO, right? UMNO is not doing so well. Negeri Sembilan, probably they will be given the Menteri Besar slot, I guess. All right, so that's it. And this state election kind of have a federal election feel, right? A little bit.
In terms of the way that the results are being published.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, I think the official result just kind of concluded. All right, so that's all for now. And until next episode, which hopefully will be soon. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.